Welcome to Podcast Game On, and the show is just beginning.
What are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
You better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly
the good old 90s. The tune that we all know and adore.
ZX Files.
Welcome. Today we have a very special episode because today
I'm already on the spot.
You're already on the spot.
My tongue is tied.
Yeah, you're tongue tied, boy. Because today we have Mikkel. I'm from the other side. Slamovitz.
You just made that up?
I totally made that up because I had no idea where I was going with it. And joined today is Dylan.
Dylan!
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. Thomas.
Special guest star.
Special Dylan. Guest star. And it is kind of unique because you're actually here from the very moment we begin. As opposed to the old days where you just walk in.
Oh, yeah.
We broke the rule. Yeah. As we're doing today, we're all speaking English.
Yep.
Hello, world.
Hello. The honor to you people.
The honor is from Mikkel. Yeah. All right. So today... If you've noticed the cover, which we will fix, I don't even have a clue how the cover will look like, but it'll be awesome, just like last time.
Of course.
It will be a sci-fi episode you're listening to right now, and we have a lot of stuff to cover.
It might be a two-parter.
It might be a two-parter. It might be also a long one, so we might actually take an intermission at one point, but we'll see if we're actually going to call it intermission and leave you with something, or we're just going to cut it out. Maybe. We'll see. So,
Surprise.
So, Dylan, you're very quiet. What's going on?
Bit scared.
Of?
Did you just say bitch scared?
I'm scared of bitches.
Bitches. Bitch. So
quite a handful.
God, this is going to be difficult to get through this show without saying those words. So, anyway, we're going to talk about the history of sci-fi. We're going to go back as far as we can.
How do we classify the history of sci-fi? When did it begin?
Man on the Moon. That very old
1902.
Exactly.
We're gonna go. I should have brought my book, man.
Yeah. You used to have that one in your drawer.
1001
sci-fi something.
Movies,
yeah.
Movies you should see before you die.
Boy, time to get busy. So, and we're gonna talk about the differences between the 50s and 60s sci-fi movies and series, as opposed to the ones that we know today. How it evolved, because you know it was kind of silly back in those days. So we're going to take a look at it and kind of see if there's an evolution going on. We're going to also mention, because it ties very well into the whole section that we're going to talk about, The Thing, which is the original thing that John Carpenter then remade called the John Carpenter's The Thing. And then recently...
The first one was just Thing, or what?
I think it was actually called The Thing as well.
Oh, okay.
And it was a black and white one, and they also recently remade, or... put
Anyone
color
you know
on it.
Who starred in it?
Nobody. This is like low budget 60s science fiction, I think. Okay. And then in 2010 they made the prequel, which I actually enjoyed.
Yeah, it was cool.
So, and then we're going
to
like
that it had Danish people and Norwegian people
and for once they were not annoying, as opposed to the one from Predator versus Alien. There was a Was that the same guy?
I don't know.
There was a Danish guy in that one too. Anyway,
I don't think so.
Yeah, there was.
Danish guy in Alien vs. Predator?
Yep. The one in the... where Bishop is and all that. Remember the one in the ice Antarctica or something? Yeah. There's a Danish guy.
No, I don't remember.
I am pretty sure. So
Steven is lying right
now.
No,
I'm not.
I think so too, man.
Oh, right. I have to introduce myself. I forgot again. See, it's ridiculous.
Again?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like last time.
It's that bitch Steven.
It's the bitch Steven. Bitch Steven. So, yeah, folks. Hi, it's me, Steven.
Nature.
And
or namaste, as we learned yesterday.
Yes, we were supposed to say namaste.
So
yeah, do you remember what it was?
Something about united souls and we all
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I appreciate and accept
you
your soul.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
it was beautiful. I liked it.
There we go, yeah. We'll do that. We'll probably take a look at what we can talk about, something that we can incorporate that whole concept in. Because we have had the Asian, we've had ayahuasca, and
maybe some Asian ayahuasca. Well, well, back on topic.
Back to what we are talking about. There's going to be some reviews. You're going to take a little bit on the topic of the Dead Space franchise, games, comic books, and the cartoon that you have seen, which is awesome.
Yep.
And
is relation to the games. So if you see the cartoons, you have more history to the games.
Exactly. And we will also do a mini, spoiler-free as much as we can, Oblivion review. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit together about Mass Effect, because you know more about it than I do. And we'll go through a number of films. I won't want to mention all of them, but there's going to be one that we all like, or at least Dylan, I think
we'll
Dylan does. I don't know.
Halo too.
Do you like John Carter?
Haven't seen it.
Bitch the door.
You son of a bitch.
Exactly.
But Dylan will also talk a little bit about Halo, because he's in the story and shit, and I never got the story, only played the game, so I'm looking forward to hearing what's it about.
Yep.
I know Halo is a world on a halo, right?
Yeah. On an artificial ring, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's the only thing I got about that game. It's there's a world on a ring.
The world is a song that starts with a world on something.
Word.
Alright, seriously. What's it? Lance Hendrickson. Because I can't remember. Apparently, if you type in Alien vs. Predator, it does not come up except for one thing from 1993, which doesn't make sense.
It's on IMDb?
Yeah. Oh, there it is. 2004. So, and the Danish guy I was talking about
was
this one.
What?
Say his name. Oh, he's Swedish, man. He's not Danish.
Well, he was born in Denmark, so...
Karsten.
Oh, no, he's not Swedish. I don't know that dude.
Never seen him before.
I don't even remember him in the movie.
Well...
Maybe he died first.
No, that's usually a black guy, isn't it?
I don't think there's a black guy in Alien vs. Predator.
There is a black woman.
There is. There's also a black guy. The Charles Whalen's... Bodyguard?
Oh yeah, the one from Resident Evil 2, yeah.
Not Yannick? So anyway, we're going to go through a little bit about the genre now, because science fiction has been, for the most part, kind of a ridiculed area, I think. Kind of like looked at and laughed at. For everyone else who doesn't understand it or thinks it's all about aliens and silly
invasions.
Maybe
in the beginning, because people wouldn't recognize that the possibly some life out there.
Yeah, but even you know, Independence Day, people were like, even though they loved it, it was a huge hit, and today it's probably a little bit of a lame movie, but back in those days, there were people who were like, completely got into it. And then there were all the other people who thought it was stupid. And those are the people who still think it's stupid. Doesn't matter if it's Prometheus or Blade Runner or whatever, it doesn't matter. They just think
it's
sci-fi
just mean they
is
they don't
stupid.
Have no imagination.
Pretty much. So the
don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
You know, we can go back, as we mentioned before, there's like everything from the Buck Rogers series on TV to the really old classical series. Like,
what's Buck Rogers?
Buck Rogers is this...
I need to explain to people who don't know.
Yeah, Buck Rogers is kind of a funny, silly 70s TV series that had a big hit, but there's also one even earlier, which was Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Savior of the universe.
There we go. God, your voice is beautiful.
It's a voice of an angel.
Yes. And then we have the we have the really good one, which I had no idea about. The Edgar Rice Burroughs, A Prince of Mars. Oh, sorry, Princess of Mars, which is John Carter of Mars. That was written in 1912. This was even
so that's John Carter.
That's John Carter. Okay. Yeah, the original story is from 1912. So when everyone
that's
was
pretty old. That's
yeah, everyone was like bitching about they were bitching about, "Oh my god, such ripoff of everything that they've seen." And I'm thinking, "You do know this was written in 1912, way before
weird.
Star Wars?"
They first pick it up now. It's like 100 years later.
Yeah, it's very strange. But I must admit that I really enjoyed that film. That was a great film.
I like the green aliens, but the human aliens I hated.
they were.
I hated when there's aliens that look like human, but oh, they have blue blood and tattoos, so they're not human.
Which one is mine, man?
The one? The one that's Phil.
Yep. Alright.
Phil.
Alright, boys. So anyway, there is also the, if we go back to the writing of science fiction, there is the H.G. Wells, very classical, The War of the Worlds.
But the movie sucked.
Well, they
love the movie.
It's, you did?
Yeah.
I hated it.
Just so people know, it's from 1898, and it takes place in that era. And it's a very, very famous radio show that made people freak out.
Yeah, I remember that. I heard that on
by Orson Welles, who was reading up, and it was the whole
aliens are
book.
And
yeah, and that was an amazing thing because you know back in those days, people were like really shitting their pants.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Oh my god! Look at the cloud. It's moving.
It is.
Get
duck,
down.
Duck and cover.
Can't do that job. No.
Get to the UFO.
Get down. Get down again. So,
but I didn't like it. Maybe it's because I didn't like his son. I hated his son.
But just
much.
So we make sure that people know which one you don't like is the
it's
one with
the
Spielberg.
Movie with Spielberg.
The Spielberg
and,
version you didn't
the
like.
The Scientology dude and Dakota Fanny and shit.
Dakota Fanny.
From 2005, I think.
Yeah. Now,
so maybe I didn't like it because there was no War of the Worlds. They just took over and then they died.
For me, the awesome thing was it's a very honest look at one single family. It's not about the war, it's about how the family would deal with this situation.
Yeah,
maybe the son was kind of an ass, but
he's pretty much
I like the story about the father trying to protect his kids.
Yeah, cool. Me too, but again, that nothing happened. I didn't see anything, you know?
See,
I would like some more, like, battle invasion, world invasion, Los Angeles,
yeah.
Or what it called, you know.
See,
so more
that movie
fighting.
Sucked. Shit.
I mean, let's each disagree. So no, it's each his own opinion,
yeah.
You know.
But it's true. But for me personally, as looking at the film from as many aspects as possible, because this is a remake, the original story is so different. Not to mention that the first film version that was made in the 60s.
War of the Worlds?
Exactly. Is also very different from this one. Now, the thing that I didn't like about the Spielberg version was, oddly enough, the whole family concept. It just didn't work for me.
Okay.
The reason it didn't work for me is because somehow every one of those characters seemed to try so hard to be an independent character and not a family unit.
Mm.
And I didn't like how they had to bring in for Dakota Fanning this whole freaking phobia that she was struggling with and having panic attacks. I mean, it was unnecessary. It was totally unnecessary because it was a catastrophic thing that was going on. There was no need for her to have a panic attack.
Mm.
It's just, it's so unreal that a girl of that age would also have to suffer with that.
Yeah.
And so we have Tom Cruise, who's...
She's always much more older than she plays.
Exactly. She acts very too mature for me. And so we have the kid who, for reasons I'll never understand...
Doesn't give a fuck and just want to kill aliens.
Doesn't understand why he just suddenly disappears. He's like, no, I'm going to this.
I want to fight him, Dad!
And he's like, well, do you know how? And then he disappears and comes back and everything's happy. And Tom Cruise...
I liked it when he runs through the street and all the people dies. When he came back all dusty and shit and looks in the middle.
The effects were great. And one of the biggest things that made me really like the element in the film was sound.
Yeah.
Mm.
Those giant trumpet-like sounds in the distance made it really scary.
Oh, yeah.
So that worked well for me. But
the scene in the dark house.
Or the rapist, or whatever the hell that guy was.
I think that was amazing.
What the fuck is wrong with him? I mean, always when invasions or shit, people always want to kill people, and I hate that. Even in zombie movies, like Walking Dead and shit, they're too different.
Yeah.
And they want to do is kill each other instead of ridding the world of zombie
problems. Yeah, I don't get that either. I'm not sure that people would really react that way.
Falling Skies, the same situation in that series.
Yeah, that band of
yeah, of course. Yeah. But we're criminals. We don't give a fuck.
But
they're fucking aliens, man.
Yeah, just like, shouldn't we stick together?
Help us!
See, it's funny you bring that up, because Falling Skies was a series I didn't really enjoy watching, because I felt it was like... there were moments, but that's just, I mean, I can say that that's just the way it was made. Maybe the story is good. I haven't seen many episodes, but
I've
compared
seen the first season.
Well, you've seen more than me. I've seen like two episodes.
But
maybe.
If you see the whole season at the final episode, you get intrigued.
Really?
Want to see more.
All right, cool.
And my brother just saw the second season, Oro Jacket. Mm. And he said the second season ended like the first season, so you're more intrigued because some other stories develops. And
cool.
Some of the aliens who work with the aliens want to do a rebellion and
work all right, so it
with
gets
some
intricate.
Of the humans. And
all right.
It sounds cool, so I'm getting psyched to see it again.
All right. Remember that old series called V?
Yeah, with the reptilians, right?
Yeah, that's from the 80s.
Okay.
But they remade it recently, which, God, was horrible.
That
was horrible.
I saw one episode.
Yeah, that was like so unconvincing with that woman. Again, we have this thing with a woman playing a cop who has a young son, and she doesn't seem like a mother at all. And it's just like, why bring that element into it if you don't know how to act that role? It's really unnecessary. So it didn't sell it for me at all. But just to get back to the genre sci-fi, which I wanted to mention because a lot of people seem to think it's all about aliens. The truth is,
well, it's about space.
It's
right?
About a lot of the things that it's not like fairy tale where it's about everything that is related to time travel, to cybernetic advancements,
future technology,
alternate timelines, mm-hmm. Time travel, as we mentioned, and superhumans in apocalyptic scenarios.
RoboCops.
Yeah, RoboCop. And I think that's the thing that I like the best because, and in the genres, is basically because that it gives you an arena to test the human psyche. It puts the humanity in a position where you can obviously ask a question, what would happen if this were to happen to humanity? How would people react? And as opposed to a fairy tale scenario, I mean, anything's possible. You wish for a wizard to appear and he appears. No, it's not the same. But like an invasion from outer space, as you said, you see people kind of react towards each other. How does that affect people, like on an internal level? And I think science fiction asks bigger questions, you know, like environmental questions, you know, social questions.
Say District 9, for example.
District 9 was an amazing film that asked the obvious questions, not to mention the fact that it presented something for once that is not in the capital of everything in movies, which is in the United States. It happened in South
Africa.
Yeah. And
apartheid situation again.
Exactly. And it was very good at mentioning those smaller details that people don't like to talk about. Just, you know, the good thing about science fiction is that it has the element of asking such questions that you can't normally do. Mm. You know, like the thing about apartheid, like the thing about racism. And in specific, has anyone of you seen the film or the TV series called Alienation?
Nope.
Nope. Great film, James Caan. And it's about the guy who wrote it was the guy who later created the Farscape series, which is one of my favorite science fiction series. Anyway, the point is, Alien Nation is pretty much it. It is a huge ship that arrives in 1997 over Los Angeles and is full of prisoners. That's it.
Alien prisoners.
Mm-hmm. Somehow they got
a
prisoner ship, but it's like, you know, they weren't even planning on getting here, but somehow they got lost or whatever, and they just ended here. So it's like thousands of aliens that are like prisoners, right? So they get here to Earth and start integrating. And that's a great thing because it's a cop story. It's about a human cop, James Caan, and he partners up with this alien.
Does the aliens drink milk and get
high? Yes.
I've seen the
exactly.
movie.
Exactly, that's it.
I've seen the movie.
It's a really great film, and the series is great too. And that deals with a lot of those questions that people don't like to ask. Mm. And this whole concept of asking questions that is very sensitive, but putting it in a different coding, started with the old TV series like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Mm. And even before that, Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. They ask those questions, and people have an easier way to to kind of look at it from a different perspective, because you kind of take yourself out of that moment rather than put yourself into that position of relating to somebody. But if you're relating to the human, but you can also see that the alien or whatever situation it is presents a dilemma, then you have an alternative perspective, which often opens up your mind. And I think science fiction generally has opened people's minds for other possibilities.
It makes people think maybe there's something out there.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to believe.
Exactly. So if we take that concept of I want to believe that there is different scenarios to life in the universe, then we can thank science fiction for that. Mm. Not to mention the fact that there's also the latest thing that kind of went internal rather than external. Instead of outer space, it was inner space, which was Matrix. Mm. It was asking the question, what if all of this is just a holographic projection, or we're in a matrix, or we're
kind of a video.
Yeah, exactly. A part of a bigger concept or a construct.
I believed that when I saw the movie a couple of times. I was like, maybe I am a battery. Maybe it just doesn't matter.
It was one of those concepts.
Free me!
Exactly. It's like, Morpheus.
Yeah.
It's like one of those concepts that you kind of can't help but think about, because it puts your thinking on a different level. Now, you take that film back into, say, 1940s. No one would understand.
Well, Matrix?
Yeah.
No.
Because so many things are connected to the film that we live in now. Mm-hmm. Computers, the digital age, the concept that humans actually do emit a certain voltage because we have the ability to, like, fuel things with our own body.
So you plug in when you go to the Matrix, or to the real...
Exactly. I mean, just the simple thing. I can't remember which company it is that makes it, but there's a watch that runs on the human battery, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not kinetic, not the same as, you know, if you move it, it charges.
Yeah.
This one actually draws power from your skin. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome. I thought, I was like, that is a cool idea.
Does it drain you of power?
I feel so tired.
Yeah,
it
works only when you...
I have no energy.
Could be your watch.
The watch keeps going faster and faster.
Yeah, exactly. I shouldn't play games on my watch. Something's wrong. So I think science fiction has given a lot to culture and people's way of thinking. They have become more open-minded. Because if you coat and paint everything nice, like when we were kids, we were brought up with Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. That's more a fantasy adventure space opera than anything else, because it doesn't really scientifically ask questions.
There's also Johnny Mnemonic, you remember that?
Yeah, that's William Gibson's story, which is... I guess we can get
that's
back...
That's also internet and...
Exactly.
And hacking.
Coincidentally, also by Keanu Reeves.
Exactly.
It was an interesting concept.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, dude, I'm going to lay back for a minute. I'm going to plug myself in and watch something.
And that's one of those things that you have to take into account. Where did this all begin? It wasn't the TV. It was stories like, you know, H.G. Wells with War of the Worlds. But the real pioneers are Alfred Bester, but most importantly are people like Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov and Philip K. Dick. These guys...
I know all the people he's talking about.
These guys are pioneers in science fiction. They wrote some of the most important science fiction that you probably can read. Asimov was the writer of the actual robotic law. You know, the...
Oh, the three laws?
Exactly. Yeah, he's okay, the one who created that one. From the, you know, iRobot.
Yeah.
That's his story. Yeah. By Centennial Man, it's his story. Bigger stories from him is like, compared to Lord of the Rings from J.R.R. Tolkien, is The Foundation. It's so intricate and so huge, spans over so many, I think it might be millennia of human evolution in the future, that it's an epic story in the future. That's Isaac Asimov. And then we go to like...
Is it a series or a
It's a series. It's a, no, it's a book series. But it is really big.
But it's not been...
People are trying to make it into a film, but it's so big that they are having difficulties
like
with that one.
Dune.
Okay. Even bigger.
Okay.
Dune is big, too.
Yeah, it's huge.
But this one is very intricate, so I don't know. I think film-wise, I don't know if it's a series that will be better. We'll see. But they are working on it. Someone is always trying but never really gets anywhere.
All right. Mm-hmm.
So we have... William Gibson is our time's science fiction writer. He's very much into the cybernetics and cyberpunk, cyber world, so to speak. So he's focusing on, you know, what's beyond the digital numbers, right? Like uploading, downloading, the Matrix kind of type. So that's William Gibson with the famous book Neuromancer. But as also the one you've seen, which was Johnny Mnemonic, that's also his. Yeah. Philip K. Dick is, people know his story through the films such as Blade Runner. Mm-hmm.
Have you read any of the books or only seen the movies?
I've read two of his books. They're really good. But it's, like for instance, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is the original book for Blade Runner, is nothing like the Blade Runner that you know.
Okay. So it's not a detective who has to...
It is, but it's different. It's not... It's very different.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you guys have seen other films from him, such as Total Recall.
Yep.
There's also Scanner Darkly. There is Imposter, which is a great film, by the way.
Okay.
Imposter is with Gary Sinise. It's about a period in the future where humans have been invaded. We never really see the aliens, but we know that they're around. And humans live in these giant protective places. And there's a worry that some have now created human-like versions that would walk around and would just suddenly explode like nuclear.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. I should probably give you guys
crazy
one of...
terrorism.
Yeah, I'll bring that one day. So it's a very good story as well. And there's... there are other Philip K. Dick stories out there that are really interesting. And he wrote these books in the early 60s. And this guy was on...
Are they easy to come by? Can you find them?
If the books?
You
oh,
find
yeah.
find them on a
yeah.
library?
Or oh, yeah.
iTunes or something?
Even that, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And if you're looking at iTunes, I'm sure you can even download some short stories that are for free. So, a very big contributor to science fiction. Now, Asimov is the... I wouldn't say that he's the intellectual type, but he definitely presents a more broader scope of science fiction.
Mm.
You know, like big, you know, worlds and bigger concepts.
Yeah.
Philip K. Dick is like, what if we get to this part and things just go bad? So he takes the human approach. So, and this is what I've always said to people. Good science fiction is always about humans. It's always about humanity. It's about how we become the best of what we can become by getting together and uniting and solving the biggest puzzle, right? And I think that's the gift of science fiction. Now, unfortunately, in the 50s and 60s, it was like, you know, space invaders from Mars, and it was kind of this silly teen horror kind of thing, but because it was big back then, you know, those slasher horror ones that, you know, 20,000 fathoms under the sea and stuff like that, and Creature from the Black Lagoon stuff. So they had to have another kind of alien space monster. So they
Virus, you've seen that?
No, I haven't. Sounds
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, wait, no, I haven't.
With a ship that's...
Yeah, I might have seen it. Yeah, it starts mutating. Yeah.
And makes robot humans.
Yeah, I actually did see that a long time ago.
It's weird.
But that was kind of like, you know, once you've seen an underwater alien film, The Abyss,
mm-hmm.
everything to that would be the comparison. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it was the ultimate film by James Cameron, but I think it was a great concept to go in and suddenly start to kind of tweak.
To go where we've never been before.
Exactly,
man,
and it's right here. Right here. And you know, why not? Why not? So it was a good film, but when we talk about The Abyss, people watch the director's cut. The ordinary cut is crap. I'm not kidding.
I don't know which one I've seen, actually.
It is, it's a huge difference.
Well, I've seen the long one.
The long one, that's the one that you gotta watch, because that gives you so much more. Mm-hmm. Explains so much more than you would normally. So,
but I like when I have the original and the extended, because then I know what scenes are in the extended.
Sometimes I can find it, sometimes, but not all the time. But yeah, with James Cameron, usually if it's a director's cut, you can definitely see it.
Yeah.
Now, so science fiction in the 50s and 60s was this kind of silly stuff, right? I showed you the other day called Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Yeah.
Dude, that commercial I think that might be the intermission commission we're going to put in.
You said you want to show it in the background, man.
I will. I will put that in during our intermission where we're going to have like our little break for air. Play that in the background. It is ridiculous. There's like constant mentioning, this is scientifically proven. I'm just going to give you a little example. Apparently, you can walk around on Mars if you just, you know, you can have your mask off, but you need to have a little gas tank, a little straw, and sip air every now and then. And then rocks magically give air on Mars. That's scientifically proven, apparently, in the 60s. Someone must have been really high. You know what? That is actually being released on Blu-ray in a very cleaned-up version. And it's gotten a 10 out of 10. Maybe it's
maybe
us.
Because it's so hilarious.
I think so. Come on, they keep a... you know, it's a spaceship, right? With two people and a monkey. Little chimp, a little one. And you know where they keep it? In a drawer.
The chimp in a drawer?
Yeah, they do. I'm going to show it to you guys after the show.
It is animal cruelty, man.
Yeah, well, if PETA wasn't around back then, this would never have happened. So it is a really, you know, funny time... But there was not really a serious film of science fiction up until 19... No. That was still kind of like this space horror, ha ha ha, I had fun being scared, right? But...
I didn't have fun.
No, this was the old
one. Oh, okay.
But then we get to 1969, I think it was. I might be wrong, people. Correct me if I am. 2001. Mm. Space Odyssey. Mm. Now, that one was the first film that people thought, holy crap, this looks real. You know, that people were like, whoa. I was actually reading an article.
Kubrick, he's crazy, man.
Kubrick, he...
Maybe that's why the theory is that he filmed the
moon landing.
To the moon,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he's so fucking badass.
I was reading an article about people I was who was in watching it on the premiere. And they went in with some kids, apparently, who were on acid.
Okay.
And those kids...
Would have been fun.
I also read the article about those who actually went in and were high. Mm-hmm. They said they have never experienced anything since like that. That it was so bizarre and so
good,
out of this...
Good or bad?
I don't really... I didn't pick that up in the article, whether it was good or bad, but they said that
it was
weird.
I saw it for not so long ago, but...
I've seen that film, like, four times.
I think
I've seen it four times. I even went to watch it in the movie and passed out because I was so tired.
Yeah.
I never watched the film from start to end. I always either start watching a little bit from the beginning and then the end, the middle. I'm not a big fan of it, I must confess.
The only thing I remember is the big black rock and the monkeys...
I like the sequel, which is 2010.
Going ape shit about it.
Yeah, did you see the 2010 one?
No.
Is that an official sequel?
Yeah.
Or just some
no.
crazy guy?
No, Arthur C. Clarke, the author of the book, although different than the film, he also wrote 3010, or 3001. I didn't see that. I actually wanted to buy that book. It was the last one in the whole concept of the big monolith, the black thing that creates life or whatever, right? The film becomes very strange. The first half of the film is like watching National Geographic. Then suddenly you see a bone that slow motion is rotating in the air, turns into the space station. And then on the space station, suddenly it turns into this...
People.
Yeah, and suddenly in that space...
It's like a business world.
It is, isn't it? It does feel like this... We're making a commercial for the space flights in the future. So you watch that, and then you have this boring crap with two astronauts who do stuff, right? And then suddenly, and I don't even remember how it happens, but there's that big monolith, and then it becomes trippy. The whole thing is like, he sees himself, but he doesn't. And then he sees himself as an old guy, but then he doesn't. And then he's dead, but not really. And it's like, you don't have a clue what's going on. And there's a lot of colors.
Maybe Stanley was on LSD.
I think Stanley is LSD.
Take blood samples.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, it's like you were talking about the other day when we're doing the ayahuasca. Maybe you can like get some DMT, raw DMT for people. Yeah. Well, this is him. He's the fountain of, you know, LSD. So it wasn't my favorite film.
I heard that 1 gram of DMT gives you about 10 trips or something.
Wow, I can't wait for getting that on the street.
Amazing how little you have to take, right, to open the gland.
The beautiful gland.
Oh, the beautiful horror's eye.
Don't start it, because we're going to end up making a third episode of Ayahuasca.
Well, fuck it, man, I love talking about it.
So, if we will, we'll have to have some other people in so we can have, like, more whatever.
Yeah.
Are we getting to that point already where air is becoming an issue? We just had, like, 34 minutes.
Let's go through the thing.
Let's go through the thing. So, 2001 was a huge success because it was so realistic and visually it was beautiful back in those days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, back in those days, there was really something else.
But, so, people got it back then? Oh, it was just beautiful.
I don't think they got it. And if they did...
But it was just, oh, it was so amazing.
I must confess, I feel dumb. Because, did you see it too?
Yeah, long time ago.
Did you
That's
get it?
That's why he's not saying anything.
It's like, memories hurt me.
Still in shock. I remember the movie as very fucked up experience.
Mm. It was, wasn't it?
Exactly. It's like, a lot of whys and what?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, someone's playing around with colors now.
What the hoota? What the?
Yeah, exactly. So, not sure about that one. But a sequel, 2010, which was sometime in the 80s.
So what? How can you make a sequel?
Because that's a real film. That's like from there's some.
So there's a plot and an arc. And
you see a whole group of
characters.
Exactly. You see the whole group of scientists from around the world. There's going to be some. Russians.
Some
and
of them from the first one.
No.
And the second. Okay.
No, but they also find this monolith, and then.
Is it the people from the space station?
No. It's some other group of people going to
So there's no fucking some place. Or
except for the monolith.
Okay.
Then I don't think there really was any. But the ending of the film, and I'll tell you people, because if you haven't seen
spoiler.
It... Spoiler. Yeah, it's a spoiler. There. Shove your...
Say it.
Shove your finger
if
in your
If you say spoiler first, you can say anything you want.
Cool. So anyway, spoiler is that this monolith creates another sun at the end. So suddenly you look up in this night sky,
so
or the
sun.
Day's, scenery, and you'll see two suns. That was the... But I don't know what the hell the purpose of that whole concept was. Still.
I'm not seeing that movie.
So, yeah. Anyway, 2001 gave birth to a new wave of thinkers who thought maybe we can take the science fiction out of it and create something. Now, if this was in 69, you can easily start imagining that people like Lucas Spielberg have seen it and started thinking, right? Mm-hmm. So... In 1974, I think, or 73, Lucas started writing the concept for Star Wars. Now, it went through many versions, and we've talked about the many alterations in the script, from the copies of Dune to you name it, and ended up with Star Wars in 1977, which was the ultimate blockbuster of science fiction at that time. It was the rebirth of a genre, the rebirth of Hollywood, with a birth of new science fiction tools, which then became ILM. So because of the effects, were just amazing.
It was.
And so we have Spielberg taking notice. We had Ridley Scott taking notice. Spielberg made the Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That was before Star Wars, Close Encounters. It's from the start of the 70s, I think.
I thought that was from 1977. Just like Star Wars.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think it's inspired of the
I'll
success.
Check it, I'll check it.
Go check.
We're checking now, people.
Because it's almost around the same time as Jaws, because it's the same lead character, right?
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Close Encounters is from 1977. Yeah. And... But the thing is that...
So it's after... Star Wars, right?
Yeah, that's the same year.
Same year, okay. But basically these two were like helping out each other, talking a lot to each other about the stuff that they're doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that film made use of... I mean, see, here's the thing. If you watch Close Encounters, you'll see... This is for the nerds, and those who watch the film frame by frame, we're none of those. But you can find it online. There's a little R2-D2 stuck under the spaceship of Close Encounters alien spaceship. So in 1977, already back then, Lucas and Spielberg were kind of like, helping out each other and sharing these things.
Is there anything in Star Wars?
Close Encounters?
Yeah.
No.
Nope.
In
Phantom Menace,
there's
E.T.
Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
In the Senate.
They look like a pile of crap with a head sticking out. It's horrible.
It's fucking ETs?
Yeah, they're ETs,
a bunch
man.
Of ETs?
Yeah, a bunch of ETs. They're all like... They're
standing
like... No, they're standing like this. I don't know what the fuck they were doing, but they're like dancing. But so anyway, so we have Close Encounters, we have Star Wars, and then we had also in 1979, was it? Which was Alien.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, Alien brought in something that has not been taken very well care of, although they tried to. Back in those days, they were like the space horror in the 60s, 50s, 50s and 60s. But actual space horror was just Alien. Now, many tried to copy it, and as we mentioned before, it was really only just Event Horizon that could live up to that status of, you know, true horror in space, right?
Still haven't seen it. I'm ashamed.
I thought you were going to hit you.
Hit you with my fan.
So, when we're talking about those things, obviously, we're reminded that out of that era, the ending of the 70s gave birth to many science fictions. E.T. was the kind, you know, the easygoing, hippie kind of E.T.
Family
sci-fi, which is, yeah, it's a good term to say.
Good.
And then we have also the rip-off of Star Wars-ish thing, which was the TV series called Battlestar Galactica, which was in the 80s. It was this...
It dates back so far?
Yeah, it does. It was the first incarnation. So, this, the one that I want you to watch, you guys, is the remake.
Oh, okay. So,
but
you,
I'd say,
you don't
I'd rather,
have to see the...
Not at all. I'd say it's more like a re-envisioning.
Okay.
It's not a remake as you know, episode by episode.
Oh, but...
It is. It has a grander...
You can make it a little bit better now, so we...
It's not just that. It's re-envisioning. There are certain elements of the story that is far greater than the one that was in the old days.
Oh, cool.
So we have that, and then many other science fictions came out of it. And then we can get to The Thing, which was in 1982, which was John Carpenter's remake of the one from the 50s or 60s. So as you can see, science fiction has grown exponentially as...
I actually saw that one on S. No shit.
And you were scared out of your...
No, I was laughing.
Oh right, you were telling
off.
Me that you were actually laughing because you felt it whole thing
so
seemed
extreme,
so
extreme, man.
And
when
you thought if
his head opens and he eats the other guy and they run around.
And you thought
like
that the acting seemed
acting
not genuine,
always sucks
right?
when I trip and watch movies because I can see through it.
Weird.
So Danish movies, they really suck. If I, yeah.
These are not real people. Well, man,
but I love that movie. I really love it. It was fucking great. I've seen it before I tripped, but yeah, the fucking effects and shit. It was awesome, really awesome.
Well, I do love the
it's
film.
It's amazing what you can do with paper mache.
Well, see, the thing about science fiction is that, as I was trying to kind of tell you guys, is that it really got to the rebirth stage once special effects and technology was with them.
Mm.
And that's in large... I think we should thank George Lucas because he invented the ILM and gave so many young creative people the opportunity to say, well let's put this on a stick and see what it
what
does.
What does the
right?
ILM stand for?
Industrial Light and Magic. And the thing about it is that today we have the digital era.
Mm.
Where everything that used to be, as you say, made out of cardboard and all these cool stuff... It looked more real because, and I think this is largely the biggest flaw in science fiction today, is that everything that's CGI doesn't reflect off of everything around them as genuinely. No matter how much they try, it's very difficult to reflect off of the actual environment.
I saw a movie called G-Force, you know, with the hamsters that are spies.
Amazing film, yes.
In the gag reel, you see Zach Galifianakis talking to a pen. Just imagine it's a hamster, and he's, you gotta do, and so, I can't do this, dude, you know, because he's talking to a fucking pen and not a hamster.
Well, this should be, as a filmmaker, I think I would never submit my actors to put this, here's a cup, imagine this is a thing. Have at least a model, right?
A fucking stuffed animal or something.
But you've seen the film, right?
Yeah.
I love the film.
It's cool.
The best example is still... Star Wars, the new movies. Oh. See behind the scenes. The actors are in a blue room.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing in a room.
Exactly.
Just imagine there's a sun.
I heard Ewan McGregor said he would never do shit like that again because it was so fucking boring.
And yet, who's the first one saying now that he wants back in Star Wars? Me.
Okay. In the final scene for episode 3, he rides on the whatever animal it is.
Oh, when that annoying sound!
Movies, it's like he rides a box in a room, and just imagine that the two sons are here, and shut up. Doesn't work.
It's really horrible, and I really don't think it's fair. And that's funny you bring it up, because I'm looking at a poster of The Hobbit behind Mikkel, and there was a interview with Ian McKellen, and he actually said that he broke down in tears making A Hobbit, because he felt that, you know, he actually burst out and said, this is not what I've spent so many years of training in acting school and the experience to stand here and look in a blue screen, you know, in a blue green background and little boxes of cut out people, right? And I can totally feel him that this is just not how you would do it. I think it's very unfair. And back to the point that I don't think that CGI is totally genuine is when we were watching the making of Oblivion, the new film with Tom Cruise and Joseph
Kosinski.
There we go. They did an amazing thing. They built a set where the apartment is, and looking out the window, they built this huge screen that looks, actually is projecting real recorded landscapes and sceneries.
So when they fly, it's real landscapes?
It's the reflection then also gets into the apartment to the point where it has the natural lighting. So that means everything looks so much more real. And you just don't question that when you watch the film. But had it been CGI, everything would have to be altered because everything has just a monotone color, right? Then you have to add the red light and it just looks fake. But the same with CGI, as opposed to real figures, and that's why they built that bubble helicopter thing that he has.
Bubble ship.
As opposed to having a CGI version, then the real version, you know, kind of reflects off the environment and it just looks more real. And I think that's what's missing in today's digital world. People just don't do it. Even the setting just doesn't look good enough. Back in those days, they had carpenters build whole sets for Alien, Blade Runner. Remember I was showing you the making of Blade Runner? That was like a whole mini town transformed into the city of wherever they were, Los Angeles in the future.
Just look at all the stop motion movies.
Yeah. So
they build fucking towns and little people that walk around.
Yeah, and this is what's missing in today's world. I think there's just so much that the artist and the computing can calculate for realistic lighting.
You just have to find a fine line between it, because I also love it. CGI is great.
Well, of course. I mean,
if you see the first Lord of the Rings, you know, because they built the shit and then lay effects on the background.
Yep.
You know, that's what I like, instead of building it all on a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in my mind, that's what's
like
wrong.
Like Star Wars.
What's wrong with the Hobbit? I know, Miguel, you love the
There's
movie.
Too much CGI in. Yeah.
That's the biggest problem.
But I can see that too. Yeah. But I still love the movie. I just love the universe.
Yeah.
But the thing I think, just briefly on The Hobbit, is Hobbit. Basically the fact that it feels rushed. It feels as if at one... I think maybe because everyone heard that they will be making The Hobbit. And Guillermo del Toro was destined to be the director for so long, suddenly he couldn't because time restraints and he was doing something else. It got pushed so hard that they said, Peter Jackson, you're going to do it again. And then suddenly it was just made in no time.
Yep. It's too bad they didn't go together, you know? So Guillermo, who made the costumes and shit, and Peter Jackson and Vida, what they call.
Unfortunately, I think Del Toro still had an artistical influence, because there's one of the dwarves who has like an axe stuck in his head.
Yeah.
I think that's not Peter Jackson style. That's crazy Mexican guy that makes up.
Remember that?
Yeah, the one. It was so stupid. I didn't get that either. Why would he have an axe in the head? And
very,
there was another one who had like a candle
visuals,
holder.
Yeah. Extreme. Visual
anyway,
style.
The white orc is definitely Guillermo.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. With. But he looked really cool, and that's CGI. So, as well as Gollum looks really great. So there
that's
are things.
That's a dude.
Yeah.
With effects.
But that's
over
the thing,
him,
right? So, like in Prometheus, the spaceship and the environment looks
so
amazing.
So that's not like talking to a pen or a cup.
No,
it's acting with.
And that's largely thanking Peter Jackson to understand. He has to have someone to do that.
There's actually a funny story from the first Lord of the Rings where Sam fights with him. He rips his wig off, and they're glued. So really? He by mistake, he rips it off, and Sam gets pissed off on the extra materials. He walks out angry because he got too physical or something.
But wasn't he also the whiny bitch in the scene where he actually steps on a rock?
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to the awesome Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, everybody Mortensen picked on him.
Didn't
everybody
step on a rock, he got a
splinter or something. Yeah, a little.
Oh,
little
come on. I know he's a hobbit, but
medic! Medic, I'm dying here! Viggo Mortensen, he broke his toe.
Yeah, and kept
acted
on acting.
On it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Shows you people. So,
but that's not sci-fi.
That's not sci-fi.
So
however,
the thing we were
so
talking about.
The thing that we're going to talk about now is just to give a short description of.
No, we were talking about the thing.
With the special effect, right? So, then we see the remade version, which isn't a remade version; it's a prequel.
Yeah.
And I thought it was tying in perfectly. Now, the thing
fucking
that I like,
amazing man.
Yeah, the thing that I liked about the thing, and I'm sure you agree. Is the whole concept that there was a spaceship that crashed here like thousands of years ago.
In the ice.
And I don't want to say too much about the sequel, or the prequel as it is, because I just want people to watch it, because it's very well tied in together, and the girl who's playing the lead role is great. I really love her. She's great at
and
it,
all
because
the
it's
stuff
very rare.
That happens.
Exactly.
You see, it had happened in the new
one. And she
so
pulls it off
well.
You see
the hole in the ice, and you see all that stuff that happens in the prequel.
Yeah.
It's in the old movie, too. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell is awesome.
Kurt Russell is awesome, and it was difficult to find someone who can kind of, like, level his... She doesn't get to that level, but she's still cool. I think she did a good job.
I think the coolest one in the new one is Lars. You know, the one who doesn't speak English. The guy with the flamethrower.
Right.
Lars!
Speaking of which, now I have to tell you this, because I don't think I remember telling you this. I did tell you, it was the thing from 1982, John Carpenter's, at the end, and this is spoiler, people, where you see the black guy and Kurt Russell. Now...
We talked about this.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, I think.
But, you know, so okay, so I won't tell everyone what it is, but I'm going to tell you that. Pay attention if you have any doubts of, is there an alien infestee in that scene? You'll know, apparently, according to John Carpenter, who it is if you pay attention to the details. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember what it was. I think I do. Talk about it in a break.
Yeah. So, now, we talked about the spaceship in the ice setting, right? So now I'm going to bring it over to you, because similarly, and this is a film that I really actually love, which is The X-Files, the movie. That also has a space scenario, aliens, spaceship, ice caps, and so on, right? But the whole series, what do you think that did? And you're watching it right now, right? So what do you think that did for the 90s?
I'm only 7 episodes in the first season.
Oh, really?
I'm at the episode called Ice. I haven't seen that yet.
Appropriate.
Yeah. But I've seen The Jersey Devil, and I've the first 2 episodes. It's about his sister and some other abductees
who gets the anal probe. Yeah,
no, they get two mole kinds of things.
All right,
Scully thinks she has them, and it's only mosquito bites. And
or is it?
Yeah, or is it? And they found a little metal thing. The guy who smokes
puts
down in a big. Container.
Cancer man.
Cancer man. When I was young, I always thought it would be a boring episode if the guy who smoked was in it, because then it was government conspiracies and talk. And
so, how do you relate to it now?
Now I'm looking forward to go into it.
Yeah,
Mulder met his first alliance, if you can call it that.
Deep Throat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and he told Mulder to back off of some abductions because they have to use him for something bigger. And
Deep Throat, by the way, is based on a real character called Deep Throat.
Yeah, the girl who made the porno, right?
No, okay, you're way back in the origin here. All right, so brief history on Deep Throat. There's a film in the 70s called Deep Throat, and it was a porn film that was sponsored by some mafia at one point. Mm-hmm. So it got all really chaotic and interesting. So that story alone is about that. But that's the film called Deep Throat. However, there was a character during the Nixon administration. Remember that? When there was like the Watergate scandal? Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember some now, deep-throating.
The Watergate scandal was basically uncovered by two reporters, journalists, from, I think it was the Washington Post.
Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, right?
Yes, but the real people were a little bit different. The real people, one of them was the one who had a contact within the government, and his name, code name, was Deep Throat. So that, you know, they also met in the garage and all that, and he, like, before he died, he came out, and he was actually, at that time, the FBI director. That's like, I think he was the FBI director or senior something, major player. Who was spilling the beans to this reporter, right? In, like, dark alleyways and, under, you know, garage places. That was, like, really big thing. So they took that whole concept, put it into the X-Files series as Deep Throat. So that's where it comes from.
Yeah, the episode is called Deep Throat, too, so...
Yeah, and it was one of my favorite characters in the show. Now, for me, I started watching it. I was always fascinated by the Alien episode. That was my, you know... forte, so to speak. I love that, so I always watched those, and I was anticipating those. The monster episodes were kind of okay. As you said, the government issue medicine that turned people into weird things, so it was never really my favorite
episode.
The
best monster episode is Tomb.
Yeah. And there's going to be the one you haven't seen, I think you haven't seen that yet, or if you remember it, the one with the Navajo Indians.
No.
Where... Okay, I'm not going to say anything. Don't want to spoil it for you.
I don't.
But it's a great series to watch up until at a point where Mulder, David Duchovny...
Yeah, gets swept out with dots. And
he for whatever reason, thinks he's better than everybody else and leaves the show.
And he doesn't get abducted or goes try to find his sister or something?
Well, in the story, they kind of try to lamely put it in context.
So Scully is always looking for him, right?
At one point, yeah. And then we have a new character called Agent Doggett.
Doggett, oh, I thought it was Dutson.
And he, as much as they try, I think X-Files should have ended a long time ago.
Have you seen it all? You like it?
Haven't seen many episodes, I think a few. Can't remember shit.
No, only the theme.
Yeah. So I'm kind of silent right now.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, so I don't have anything to say, actually. I haven't seen the movies. I think there's two, right?
Yeah.
You never been interested or just...
Sure. But when I was... When X-Files was going on the Danish television, yeah. I was...
He was about 3 years old.
I was too small to understand anything. And it was extremely late, I think.
Yeah. Fucking scary,
and
man.
As far as I know, there haven't been any reruns.
No, actually. No, interestingly...
Maybe some Zulu Sunday.
Maybe, yeah. But...
So I haven't... got a chance to see it because I don't want to invest in a box set if I don't know.
So I'll bring it to you if you want it. Okay. Yeah. I have it on my hard disk.
It is funny though, isn't it? Because I started watching it with my girlfriend like a year or 2 years ago. And it's funny to look at the first season because it's so early 90s. It's like we're talking about these agents, right? And they don't even have cell phones.
No.
It's like, okay. Meet me here!
Is any of it authentic? Any of the cases?
Well, let me put it this way.
Let
me put it this way. I met Chris Carter and Frank Sputnik, the creators of X-Files.
Yeah.
And I've always had a suspicion that a lot of the stuff that he was doing...
I mean, in one of the episodes, they write it's a real case or been taken...
They usually don't. Sometimes they do, but they stopped at one point, even though they had many cases that were actually real cases.
Yeah.
Now, I actually asked him how much of X-Files came from real sources.
Yeah.
And he just laughed and said, you'd be surprised. And that's
pretty scary.
And the thing that really was scary about it was that, you know, I had
you'd
a suspicion.
You'd be surprised nothing?
Or yeah, you'd be
surprised everything.
Exactly. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot. I think he actually, Chris Carr did have a contact within the government. Because too much of the stuff that he was relating to...
So there is a X-Files department, maybe.
Well, there is an X-Files department. It's not
it's
called
just
X-Files.
Unsolved cases.
It's at a certain place with certain people. Probably not very funded. I don't know what the hell it is. But he did tell me that they do have a section with unsolved cases, mysteries, and stuff like that. And he was privileged to be part of a group who got to see old cases. So much of the old cases were just translated into a script for representation to include Scully and Mulder in an adventure, right? Sputnik is the guy who writes well. The guy who creates a lot of the good shows, like, you know, dialogue and character developments. But I think Chris Carter is the guy who goes out and gets the hard facts that he kind of uses and translates into the story. Now, if you wonder how can I see if any of this is real or if there's any connection to it, you have to watch the show and you have to know a little bit about what happened at one point or another to relate to something, right?
Yeah.
But there's a show that he made that was a spin-off show called The Lone Gunman, which Langley, Frohickey, and Byers, I think his name was. And these guys were the hacker guys later in the show that was kind of always helping Mulder with, you know, solving digital cases and hacking into the government's secrets, you know. So these guys got a spin-off series. It lasted about roughly a season, but it didn't make it. But it came out at a really bad time. It wasn't very good either. But
I thought it was boring.
But the first episode, I really
Too much tech.
Yeah, it wasn't
what I remember.
But it was also kind of, it didn't really feel, it felt like silly. Mm. Right? It didn't feel really.
Yeah, this is kind of comedy, Three Stooges.
Exactly. However, you should see the first episode. I would like you to see that one too. Mm-hmm. When you see the first episode, pay attention to what happens and go back and check out when the show was written, that episode, when it was aired. It was written early 2001, like January, I think. That's when the final draft was done and ready for shooting. And it aired in, I think it was something like June. First episode, pilot episode, and it was all about September 11th. All about that. Like, airplane,
maybe
hijacking
got
control.
An idea from the series.
It would be...
We will do that!
Allahu Akbar! Good idea!
Fucking assholes.
So, it's very strange that Chris Carter just so happens to have something, again, that is so closely related, right? Mm. So you can kind of argue, did he know someone who said something that this could happen, use it? Or was this a fair warning from someone to just have it in a TV or show, whatever? It's up for debate. It's in the conspiracy theories facts.
Write us.
Write us if you disagree, whatever. And this whole concept of write to us, please. Yeah. Fuck you.
We don't care anymore.
Whatever, man. We see you're listening. I don't know. Maybe you don't have hands. I don't know. Anyway, so basically, they made that, you know, show, and so there were many things throughout X-Files that kind of always talked about things that did happen. They just put Mulder in as a vehicle to show and tell the story, right? Cool. And Chris Carter also made another show called Millennium, which we saw the other day, which is a very different show from X-Files.
Yeah, but you know, kind of CSI-ish, you know, he's...
With the occult.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with supernatural, superstitious stuff, which was really cool. But I didn't like it when it first came out. I was like, oh, God, I don't get it.
I think I actually did, because it was scary. And I missed that. I like horror shows.
Well, progressively, X-Files got dumber and dumber.
Yeah, exactly. I think
so,
maybe that's why.
For people who watch the show, I want to watch it. Just watch it with as long as you can for about the season before.
When Mulder leaves.
When Mulder leaves, just a season before that. Yeah. But no, actually, even a season before that, because there's a whole season of Mulder just appearing randomly. And it's really stupid.
Okay.
So I don't really like Dave Duchovny as an actor. He seems to be a uptight prick. And he's in this stupid show called Californication,
which I've heard is actually fucking hilarious.
Hilarious if you're into porn.
Californication.
It says it in the title. But anyway, so
he's a hand model in Zoolander.
Right, he was. Yeah, I remember.
That's a great
And then Gillian Anderson, who I also met, who is tiny, by the way.
Hot.
Very small. Funny, too. wow, she's a kid size. She was very... annoying
in,
No, no. In real life, she's very funny. I mean, she's cute, funny. I don't know. I didn't have it. Like, I wasn't having a dinner party where they're like, "Hey, let me tell me stories." It was basically.
So, are you Rhett down there too?
So anyway, the thing I want to say is that she got worse throughout the show because she was a skeptic.
Worse how?
Like, she was like this snitch, right? She was in the first season.
Yeah,
she
but
was
he
like
knows. Report- he
yeah,
knows.
Sure. But we know that too. But then, towards the end, she becomes this like really uptight with a purpose. I want to show this and that, but still is a freaking skeptic. Although she's been abducted, she's
like, that too.
"Are you
I
kidding me?"
Too,
he's like, yeah. "What more do you need?"
Yeah.
So it annoyed me. And then to talk about the films, the film, the one called X-Files, the movie is great. It encapsulates everything X-Files is about, and you see all the stuff you want to see, and it's great. The sequel is. Like Buck Lau would say, it's a disgust. It's completely disgusting. It's stupid. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel like X-Files. There's nothing supernatural about it.
It's so the one with the...
So frustrated. It's a disgust.
Is it the one with the psychic dude? Or
yeah,
what?
Exactly. I just didn't get it.
I thought... Wasn't there three movies?
No. They're talking about a third one.
Didn't we look it up when there was...
No, there was X-Files a game.
No, yeah, there was a game. Game, right. Yeah.
The game is cool. Game's cool.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it like CSI? You investigate and or do you run
kind
around?
Kind of. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's more like trying to solve a puzzle.
Yeah.
But talking about this whole franchise of X-Files, it just never really caught on anywhere else. They made some comic books.
Period,
they made some games.
On, right?
Yeah, but it died out. So because
people start looking up, I think.
I think actually, yeah, they start believing.
Mm.
And I think that's the inheritance of X-Files.
Except this guy.
Yeah, I'm ashamed.
The man who the man who walks around with a barcode on his chest and a deer.
I'm ashamed.
What is that about? So, okay. I think generally, if there's anything you want to add more to the X-Files experience...
There's one thing where you hear a hypnosis interview with Mulder.
Yeah,
when he talks about when his sister got abducted and
Samantha.
The alien is talking to him, don't be afraid, oh. And we're gonna take care of him. And then the hypnosis dude tells him, "Do you believe him?" "I want to believe."
Yeah,
and that chilled me out. I love that.
They had some good episodes,
and that hooked me. You know,
yeah.
When he said that, and then the text starts to come in, and the episode was over, but.
Lately, since I can't sleep, I always think back on one episode where they had like this genetically modified something with these soldiers that couldn't sleep for years, since like Vietnam or something.
X-Files?
Yeah. I was like, "What? Oh, I feel you, man."
Like a Manchurian Candidate?
Yeah. So I think, yeah, X-Files is one of those recent series that kind of got the mainstream hooked on the possibilities of, you know, don't trust your government. They're lying to you. They're
really
are,
don't.
Yeah, I think that kind of, you know, rubbed off on some ways good and some bad. But let's do a review, because Dylan has been awkwardly silent too
How
long.
How about we watch that trailer you were talking about?
Already? Well, you haven't, you're sick, you're hallucinating?
Ah, no.
Can we do a quick review of Oblivion before we start
yeah,
in
yeah.
with
Oblivion,
the...
Oblivion, yeah, take it away.
Yeah, cool. So Oblivion is the latest science fiction film from Tom Cruise... And it is one of those science fiction films that I think is more intelligent and is not one of those Battle Los Angeles, you know, aim to destruct the world in so many ways. It is a pretty intelligent film, and I liked it a lot visually. I think it was great. The story was interesting, and it was very satisfying.
What is the story, quick?
Wow. Okay, so quickly... Without spoiling, the story is... That it's in the future.
So it's so big you can't say it quickly or what?
No, I don't think I can say
Tom
too
Cruise
much about it.
Tom Cruise. That fixed drones.
Yeah, on Earth after a invasion that happened.
Alien invasion?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he's just repairing the drones that are fixing, you know, places on Earth to be habitable
yeah.
again. So like that's War. His job. And yeah, kind of like a human Wally. So it's a really good film because it has quite a few twists,
mm-hmm.
and visually it's stunning.
Hmm?
In the movie?
Yeah.
Movies?
Yeah.
First Class?
class?
No, not the expensive tickets at Steven.
No, I didn't see it first class either, because, you know, the cheap.
I just saw it regular style.
Yeah. Okay.
2D, man.
I'll come back with my ticket and flaunt.
Woo! Look, me. That's where we laugh. So what was different? So anyway, it was a good film, visually, and keep in mind the guy, Joseph
Kaczynski.
Dude, you can, jump in any time. This is his second film. The first film was Tron.
Yeah.
And Tron, like Tron is visually...
Oh, the first Tron?
No, Tron Legacy.
Okay.
The Tron Legacy. Now, it was a visually beautiful film. Well, I mean, to the detail, it was beautiful. The story was...
Did you see it in 3D, the movie?
Yeah.
Bio?
Yeah, I saw it in 3D and IMAX.
Oh, awesome. I've never seen IMAX.
Yeah. That was like, whoa.
And the fucking soundtrack is amazing.
Amazing. Now, since that was his first film, it was a great introduction, right? This character's like, whoa, this director can do stuff. So I was very skeptical because Tron is an inheritance. There's already a concept, many years of people writing fan stuff, you know, it's like comic books and everything. So it's, you know, he takes something and makes it better. That's different than coming with a brand new thing.
And Disney, so not that
exactly
much action. And
so we can see that in this one, it's the first real film that is completely his. And I thought it was just amazing. Like the sound of the drones. Oh, boy. If that...
Yeah.
I mean, that alone, because when me and my girlfriend were in the cinema, there weren't that many people. It was like afternoon-ish, like at 1:40 in the afternoon.
The best time.
Yeah, and there was not that many people, so the speakers were really loud, and when that drone was making the sounds, the whole thing was shaking. I was like, wow!
Damn!
Yeah, bitch!
Maybe you squirted a little? Vibrations?
Well, my intestines were just like, are we supposed to go
Camilla
now?
Camilla was silent.
Great film. What do you have to say about it?
I think Steven likes it more than me.
I think it was an
I thought it was an awesome movie. I would like to compare it to Tron, actually, because if I had to rate them, give them a grade, I think it would be around the same. But the story in Oblivion is way better, and the visuals are way better. But the soundtrack in Tron is just so insane, so that makes up for the lack of story.
Okay.
So I've given them the same grade if I had to give them a grade.
Yeah.
But awesome movies, both of them. And visually, Oblivion is insane.
Yeah, and it's a great start to begin with.
The storyline, you're not so far enough?
Yeah, I actually like the story a lot. It's better than the storyline in Tron.
Okay.
And as far as I know, Kaczynski wrote it himself.
Really?
Yeah, that's what IMDb tells me. So.
Really? I must confess that beyond the visuals, Oblivion satisfies me in many ways because it's a typical science fiction. Not that way.
But I've heard a lot of people say that Oblivion is
boring,
way similar to the movie Moon, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
So I can't say if it is.
I can't.
You're right.
I wouldn't say that.
You're right, it is.
Moon is one guy in one space station. Oblivion is a fucking old world and...
Well, yeah, but anyway, you're right. He also was part of the writing, apparently, for a comic book.
Yeah, as far as I know, he wrote it before he made Tron.
Sweet!
And,
I could recommend Moon. It's like, Castaway. It's a one-man film.
Yeah, I don't know. It was all right.
I love it. He's a fucking great actor.
He is a great actor, but I was kind of... See, that's the thing, because I was actually a little bit bored with that film. But yeah, I guess there are certain things you can compare it with. I would agree, but you have to see Oblivion to understand it. Mm-hmm. Now, the film Oblivion touches upon the classical science fiction themes. The typical ones that I really appreciate in this one. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you that because there's a lot of it.
So who's Morgan Freeman? He's some of the people that's not supposed to be there, there anyway?
Yes, but I can't say more than that. He's a great addition. I don't think it's a good idea to do that. But just to touch upon the whole science fiction thing, it was a great introduction to a science fiction year. Because this year, Oblivion starts off great. The next, I wouldn't say Iron Man 3 is a science fiction. It's a superhero film.
Yeah.
Star Trek is the one that comes out next, and it looks amazing so far.
After Earth.
And then After Earth.
Elysium.
And there's apparently one film coming out that is supposedly with George Clooney as some astronaut thing.
Oh, okay.
Again?
Yeah, it's not Solaris. It's supposed
Solaris
to be Solaris 2.
I've never seen that, actually.
Have you seen it?
No. Elysium looks insanely beautiful.
It does, doesn't it?
And every time I remember that this and guy was supposed to direct Halo, I am this close to crying because it's insane how awesome that movie would have been.
Yeah, like District 9, you can see the similarities, the pictures, the effects, the robots look fucking cool, man.
So whoever didn't give the budget to Halo, you son of a bitch!
Yeah, let's find I'll sick Dylan on you, man.
Yeah, he's gonna rip your face off.
But also, with regards to upcoming sci-fi movies, I have to mention next year when Christopher Nolan makes his next movie, Interstellar.
He's gonna make it in next year, but it won't be released.
It will
next
be released November 2014. So,
do you know any good place to have a cryo sleep? I need to sleep till then.
That is gonna be insane.
His brother wrote it, right?
Yeah. Originally, it was a story written by some science guy called Kip Thorne.
Mm-hmm. He wrote Kip Thorne, really?
Yeah. He wrote it together with Jonathan Nolan.
Okay. Whoa,
and it
dude
was supposed to be a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
But Spielberg dropped out, and
yeah, I remember.
Christopher Nolan took it up as a project. He rewrote it.
Lovely.
Yeah. So
thank you, Chris and Steven.
That's really strange because Spielberg lately, as I've told you guys, I think he's like falling behind.
But he canceled that robot.
Yeah, Robocopalypse or something like that. It's also one of those things again, dude. It's science fiction is where you started. Yeah. Well, not really, but it's you're I really know good at it. So I why know are you not giving us some more science fiction?
Yeah, some more Super 8, man.
Which was J.J. Abrams, and yet it felt like Spielberg, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that film was meant as a Spielberg tribute.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He produce?
Yeah, he produced it, and every time J.J. Abrams spoke about it, it was a tribute to Spielberg of the 70s and
80s. Yeah, so, with the Super 8. And,
yeah, it felt like E.T. with...
Yeah, with some different not kids an and a fucking scary alien. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So this is you're sure about Kip Thorne because he's a big guy in science.
100% sure.
Dude, that film is going to be insane.
Is it the dude that consults people when they make scientific things in movies? There's a dude they consult, like in what's it called? Mission Impossible 4, when he uses the
right
gloves. You know?
I think this guy's more on a theoretical level, because he's the one who's going to be telling you if, you know, bending space and time is possible, and if
like
it
that
does, how would that work?
Again, there haven't been much news about Interstellar, but he's involved, Kip Thorne, and Anne Hathaway, and what's his name? Matthew McConaughey. That's the only thing I know.
Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, but... You know, Chris Nolan could get anything out of every actor, so I wouldn't question
him. As long
him
as he's not long, blonde hair and, hell no, let's go surf, dude.
Yeah. So I think it's time for that intermission, so you guys enjoy the trailer for the amazing movie called Robinson Crusoe on Mars. It's so amazing, it'll make you feel like an ant after you've seen it and think you have never seen anything so beautiful, so real,
so
perfect in design. The effects will make you cry. And that's when we're going to start the trailer. Enjoy.
Experience all the heart-pounding suspense of this first two-man space probe, traveling more than 71 million astro miles toward Mars. Here are all the unexpected terrors of outer space.
Unidentified flying mass. Dead ahead.
Collision course. Fire main retros.
Firing main retros.
Mars gravity's taking over, pulling us down. Prepare to eject. Emergency procedure.
Blast off when you're ready.
The scorching surface of the fire swamp that is Mars. A world no man has ever seen, and now one man must explore alone. A temporary home is found. How long can a man stay alive?
Now, my two most difficult problems are air and water. I have, with what's left in my tank and one reserve cylinder, enough oxygen for about 60 hours. Of course, once my air gives out, water won't matter.
No air to breathe. But suddenly an unexpected source of oxygen. The life-giving miracle of the yellow stones that burn like coal. Here is a modern Robinson Crusoe struggling for survival in a cruel environment. Finding water. Discovering a source of nourishment. But unable to lick the most terrifying problem of all.
You've got to face the reality of being alone forever.
The devastating laser beams with which spacemen from the constellation Orion excavate the rare minerals of Mars. The escaping slave worker who becomes a modern man Friday. The storm of burning ashes whose fury descends on Mars. The polar ice cap and the wild surface storms that cover the planet with freezing cold. The holocaust of searing hell when Mars and a flaming asteroid collide and turn the ice cap into molten lava. The violent celestial bombardment of Mars by attacking humanoids from another galaxy.
Wasn't that just...
So you can breathe with rocks.
You can.
That's amazing.
It says scientifically proven. Yeah. It is one step ahead of present-day technology.
You just need
and
one of
reality.
Those voices in commercials. Everything that says it is not true.
Yeah. Should have that in the ending. But, folks, this film is a... it's supposed to be a very serious film. Adventure.
Classic or cult.
Apparently.
Like, sorry. Yeah, I went to the Danish voice right there.
You oh, son of a bitch!
Oh, now you're back, huh?
But anyway, it got 6.6 in IMDb, and there's tons of people praising
like
the
we talk
crap
about
out of it.
Cult movies.
Yeah,
is also the definition of shitty movies.
Exactly. So
maybe this is a cult.
It's
shitty
a it's a film. Hilarious science fiction film.
Again, you can breathe with rocks.
Yes, and apparently...
And it's scientific.
Yeah, it is. And there's sea cucumbers that this character actually eats and gets really high at one point.
So he hallucinates and
yeah.
Just acts.
No, he hallucinates.
Hallucinates.
Hallucinates. Right, so now that we've shown or let the audience hear a little bit about this amazing science fiction, let's continue. So you wanted to talk about Halo.
Yeah, we have our own little expert.
Dylan is my name.
Dylan knows Halo, so let's start with the first one.
Yeah, tell us about the concept.
The concept of Halo is in far out in the future, I think it's 2500. Mm-hmm. Not to be exactly, but around that time period.
Something with a war? Or?
Not yet.
No?
The humans have colonized space.
Yeah.
And... more and more and more colonized, I don't know how to describe this, but at some point there is a kind of rebellion in the humans. A part of a group of humans call themselves the Insurrectionists, or the Insurrection, or something like that.
And Insurrection.
Kind of try to break away from the rest of humanity.
Why?
I don't know. They're not satisfied with whatever law or something.
So we, when you say colonizing, we are taking planets that are not habited? Or are we invading people?
No invading. From the start of the Halo storyline, there is no other alien life form known.
Okay, so it's only humans.
Yeah, humans colonize space, getting further and further out.
Yeah.
And these rebels break off, and the military starts a program which they call the Spartan program, with the super engineered soldiers.
With us, Master Chief, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. With genetic engineered soldiers, which are stolen at the age of 6 already and trained throughout youth, and injected with this kind of, I don't know, special stuff. Yeah,
they get,
I don't know what it is, but it's better muscles, reflexes.
Yeah, it's like Captain America.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the soldiers are meant for this threat of rebel humans. And most of them don't make it through training because the injection of...
Kills them.
So there's not many of them, but they are made because there's this threat.
So what is Master Chief? Is he a prototype or just...
No, he's just a soldier. He's just
functioning
a soldier.
One.
His tag number is Spartan 117.
Okay.
So he's not the only one. He's just one of them. And,
okay, cool.
And as Cortana, one of the main characters, says, he is never the fastest, strongest, or anything. He's just the best combination. He's the most luckiest.
Okay, yeah, cool.
So as these super soldiers are grown, some random day they meet a new kind of species in space called the Covenant, which is a covenant of different alien species.
Mm. So it's like a federation.
So it's not the same race.
No.
Okay.
No, I think it's 4 or 5 different.
Yeah. Okay.
Types.
It's the small ones and the.
Yeah. Yeah.
The big
and,
ass.
And these
awesome swords.
This covenant isn't very friendly.
Mm.
So they are very religious and seek out artifacts of an ancient civilization they call the Forerunners.
Yeah.
And they find something on a human inhabited planet where they start the war because they want the relics on the planet. And the war wages on for, I think, for 20, 25 years.
So that's the first game?
No, that's the first book.
Okay.
And
so just so people know, this is actually a birth from a console game from Xbox.
But the first book is called The Fall of Reach. It was launched the same time of the first game, so
right,
kind of
so
together.
All right, okay. Cool.
I think it was 2001.
Exclusively on Xbox.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So the war waits on for like 20 to 25 years until the Covenant reach the outer rim base of main base of humanity, which is called Reach, and launch an attack. And Covenant are highly superior. So
Halo Reach is kind of a prequel game where you play some rookies and nothing with Master Chief.
No, Master Chief isn't in the game. Yo, in an Easter egg, but
not
main storyline. Yeah.
Okay.
So they launch this attack on Reach, and the planet is basically destroyed.
Yeah. You lose.
One ship called the Pillar of Autumn escapes with Master Chief. Just makes a random blind hyperspace jump.
So that's the ship from the fourth...
No, first game.
Okay.
Random jump in space and... Yeah, whatever. It stops at some point in space and they discover this ring world called Hey Halo.
I can see your Halo, Halo.
Exactly.
I got it in!
And, of course, the Covenant has followed them there, and this Halo ring is built by this ancient race called the Forerunners.
Mm-hmm. But they're not... living there, the Forerunners only just came in the fourth game. Right?
Yeah, that's kind of hard to explain. The Forerunners are basically dead.
Yeah.
Or
gone.
Yeah. So in the first game, you reach this ring world and see what it is, why it's built. It is basically a weapon, they think, to begin with.
Yeah.
And the Covenant are under this belief that if they activate this, they would become gods. They haven't quite understood what the weapon is, so it's your mission to stop them from activating it. Because what it is, actually, is just... it makes a blast that destroys every sentient life in the galaxy. It's kind of a last resort option. Because the Forerunners have discovered this race called the Flood, which is just actually a parasite.
Infection,
which they have imprisoned on these Halo rings.
Mm. Okay.
And the reason why the Forerunners are dead is because the Flood got loose and they activated the Halos to wipe out every life in the galaxy.
Okay.
And then they hit seeds everywhere so the civilization would rise again, created humans and all the other races.
Yeah.
And that is basically the first game.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like burning crops when you have to
Exactly.
You're like Alien versus Predator when they, you know, do the shit that breeds the aliens, and if it gets too much, they destroy it.
Exactly. Good example. That is basically the first game. It ends up with you blowing up the ring.
Mm.
Master Chief and his AI companion, Cortana.
But you find out there's more rings, right?
Yeah. As a, in the first first Halo game, it is called Installation 04. So you know there's at least four.
You got a good memory, man. Yeah.
In in Halo 2, it is revealed that there are seven rings.
Okay.
Hidden.
And it's all Forerunner rings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is placed various places in the galaxy to be most effective.
How much of this is part of the game that you play, or is this actually part of the book?
From
Are you mixing the two together now?
No. The first stuff I told about was the book. Mm. But as soon as you get to Halo, that is the game.
The game is to save or blow up Halo or what? Yeah.
First Halo game is to blow up the ring.
All he's telling me, I remember playing.
Yeah.
All right.
Second game, you get back to Earth as Master Chief, the main character, and the Covenant find Earth. They discover where the Earth is. It has been unknown to them until now. And in the desert of New Mombasa, the Covenant find something hidden, which is Forerunner, which leads them to this place called the Ark, which is the, I don't know how to say this, but it's not a Halo ring, but it's also a Forerunner installation in space. That can remotely control all the rings.
Okay, and that is here when you team up with the Elite, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can play both characters.
Yeah,
you
in Halo 2,
if you co-op, you play Master Chief and an Elite. Yeah, so you're an alien and
in Halo 2, the Covenant start to fall apart, I would say.
And you can dual wield. Yeah, that you can't do in the first one.
Mm. One of the races in the Covenant called the Elites. What is it called? They leave the Covenant.
Mm.
And by the end of Halo 2, they actually join humanity in a joint force.
All right. How many Halo games have there been?
The first trilogy is three games. Mm. 1, 2, and 3. And it's about the humanity war against Covenant on Halo.
And then there was Reach, which is the prequel when you see the war when they invade.
Yeah, exactly. But as Miguel said, in Halo Reach, you don't play as Master Chief.
No, you're just... you are OD Orbital Drop
you are
system.
A Spartan 3 project. Master Chief is a Spartan 2 program.
No, that's before Reach. It's Halo ODST, or what's it called?
Halo ODST is in between Halo 2 and 3.
Okay.
There's a hell of a lot of games.
Yeah, there is. But they're all great.
Yeah. So, basically, in Halo Reach, you play what is called part of the Spartan 3 program, which is more rushed soldiers where random people actually can enlist. They aren't trained from youth.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I don't know what age, but they can join whenever and get this injection.
Yeah.
So they're not as good, but there's many more of these soldiers.
Yeah. And it's all out war in that game.
Yep.
They drop in their parts.
Yeah.
And
but basically, the first three Halo games plus Reach and ODST were made by Bungie.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. A former Mac developer, which was bought by Microsoft in, I think, 2000. Mm. But when Microsoft bought Bungie, they said you can create a brand for Xbox to live on or to... Yeah, the high standard of games.
To elevate the console.
And they said, when you have given us this game, you can go independently again.
Mm-hmm.
Which they did. So Microsoft formed a company called 343 Industries, made by former Bungie employers and others, to keep making Halo games.
Mm-hmm.
And they launched...
Number four is...
Yeah, that is another developer called 343 Industries. 343 Industries, which came back in November, I think, or September.
Is this the same... No, it's not the same one that is now doing Destiny, right?
No, that's Bungie.
That's Bungie.
Yeah.
All right, so that's their first independent new kick in the new kind of franchise we're hoping that's going to develop. It's going to go for both consoles, for the Xbox and PlayStation, as far as I understand.
Yeah, and also PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
So I guess next-gen Xbox as well, when it's revealed. I don't know.
What is it Destiny is? Is that night game with dragons?
No. It's some science fiction with a giant... Death Star like moon.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But yeah, as I said, Halo 4 is the first game in a new trilogy.
Okay.
So
nice.
the first three games plus Reach and ODST were against the Covenant. And in Halo 4, because this is kind of a spoiler, but Halo 3 ends with Master Chief just drifting off in space in cryosleep.
You wake up there in the fourth.
Yeah, in the fourth game, I think it's 4 years later or something. He wakes up at this foreigner planet. Left in whatever. And one of the forerunners is still alive and is a threat to humanity. And the game starts actually by you landing on this new planet called Requiem. And that's cool. The forerunner installation. It's not a actual planet. It's kind of a metal planet.
But they're covenants too, right?
Yeah. So the game is going on inside of the planet. There's no real surface.
That's there the big metal layer. Ball that flies by you, right? That's
That's the Forerunner. Forerunner ship. That's the, ship, the, okay, the main.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Villain is using. Okay. But yeah, there's also Covenant, which isn't quite explained because Master Chief is not in contact with the rest of humanity.
Is this the latest game?
Yeah. Mm. He's not in contact with humanity because he has just been drifting in space.
Mm. Yeah, his ship got destroyed, right?
Humanity actually just thinks he's dead.
Just been in cryo.
So, when the game starts, you meet a new part of the Covenant. Or at least that's what we think until now.
Mm.
Which are, just like there were insurrections of humanity, these are kind of Covenants that has moved on and formed their own fraction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't actually explained in the game. I think that will be in part 5 and 6.
Whoa.
And also there are a hell of a lot of comics,
cartoons,
games, and there are together,
Forward Unto Dawn.
Yeah, exactly. With Halo 4 they made a little
Waypoint
web series called Forward Unto
Dawn. I got it at home, but I haven't really seen it because I've seen
have
it a little
in my,
bit.
Ultimate Edition.
But
Halo
is it any
pack.
Good?
Yeah, Forward
it's
Unto Dawn is
fucking nice.
Is also before the Covenant War.
It's a little like Blood and Chrome, actually.
Because I was thinking...
Same style with CGI.
It's also Machina or whatever company that was making that one, as far as I remember.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they just published it.
Oh, they're the distributors?
Yeah, but the storyline shortly in Forward Unto Dawn is also before the Covenant or
You see the Spartans train,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They're in
no,
the
it's,
20s
it's,
or something.
It's about a military academy, which at some point
work with Spartans,
are invaded by Covenant to start the war. And I think that's in the middle of the series or something. And Master Chief shows up in the show and saves a bunch of kids. But yeah, the Forward Unto Dawn is about a couple of kids training to be orbital shock troopers, when the Covenant invade the planet.
So, it's a pretty big story, but obviously, how would you see that the guy who made District 9 would be able to pull it off in one film? It wouldn't be one film, would it?
No, it has to be a trilogy.
Yeah, but as far as I know through reading on internet, the first movie wouldn't be based on the first game.
Hmm.
As far as I could read, the movie would be on the first book, Fall of Reach.
Cool.
So it would follow the training of the Spartans...
And the invasion.
Yeah, the invasion of the Covenant and the 20 years of war. And it would maybe end with them finding the first Halo. I don't know. But that was the original script, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie got too expensive for some reason.
Shit. It's a big-ass project.
The funny thing is that both 20th Century Fox and Universal joined up to make the movie. And they didn't have the money together.
But how can it be so expensive? It just doesn't make sense. What, are they moving out in space or what?
I think
there are so many Halo fans, and if you played the game, it has to be the same feel in the movie. It has to be that big.
But I mean, we're limiting the technology to the CGI and landscapes. I mean, how much more bigger can it be than, say, Avatar? How much more bigger, if CGI-wise?
I don't think it can.
I don't think that.
Well, it can when you bring in the HFR and shit.
But I mean, we're talking about the CGI has a set amount.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then what are we talking about? Every Hollywood actor that is the highest paid that wants to be in it, or what? Where is the money?
Yeah,
escaping.
I don't think the budget was as big as Avatar.
Probably. Yeah.
But I think that Neil Blomkamp, the director, were kind of. Very demanding and wanted to push forward his vision and what didn't want to be affected by the studio and Microsoft. He wanted to make his own vision of the franchise. And they didn't want to do that. They apparently couldn't agree.
That was the thing I was reading, that both Microsoft wanted it one direction, and the game company that was developing it wanted a different direction. And, well, Neil just said, you know, guys, until we can come to an agreement, there's not going to be a film.
But I still think, because...
There was always also talk about Peter Jackson, right?
Peter Jackson was a producer on Halo. He was the one who picked out Neil Blomkamp.
Okay.
And when Halo fell apart, he supported Blomkamp to make District 9. Okay. That is actually a Peter Jackson produced movie.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
It's awesome.
That's fucking great.
But yeah, I think if Elysium becomes a success,
yeah,
and he proves once again that he can make
it's successful, a kickstart to Halo, maybe.
Because the franchise, as far as I know, if not the biggest, but one of the biggest game franchises, together with maybe Warcraft and what is it called,
Mass Effect.
Yeah, those games are maybe one of the top franchises.
It's funny you bring up Mass Effect, because I want to actually ask about Mass Effect, because it's similar to me. When I hear this, although I only played the third episode, I know that Mikkel has more knowledge about Mass Effect. And you were mentioning that the Elysium had a certain feel to Halo. I felt that it had a certain feel towards Mass Effect. Because
what kind of a combination?
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. I wouldn't know much.
Elysium is the Citadel or the
Exactly.
Halo ring.
Exactly.
Earth is,
for me, it was the Citadel, and for you, maybe it was the rings, right? Yeah. So I guess somewhere down in the very pits of his, you know, development of the film, he probably injected a possibility for everyone to be able to say, "I want a Halo film." Mm. Or I want a Mass Effect film. And even if it's not a Mass Effect film, then whoever likes Mass Effect would know that Halo is a great story. I want that. So the support would be, wow, he can pull this off. I want this guy to do it. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about...
I don't get why they didn't see it in District 9.
The thing that sucked with Halo not being being made is they went extremely far in the pre-production process. They made a vehicle, the Warthog. Mm-hmm. They made weapons. Neil Blomkamp made a couple of short movies for Halo 3 commercials.
Really?
And as far as I know, I don't know if the script was finished, because they talked a lot about Master Chief can't be the main character in the movie. Because one of the cool things about Master Chief in the game is you never see his face.
He never, almost never talks.
You as the player are him. It is harder to relate to him if you can see his face isn't yours. So,
and then
the movie,
everybody knows Master Chief. It's like Just Dredd.
Yeah.
The first movie flopped because he took his mask off, and you saw fucking Stallone, and the other one follows the comics where you don't see his face.
So either the movie has to reveal Master Chief's face, or he has to be a not a main character. And I don't know how they solved that, but they went pretty far.
Maybe
in
pre-production. Cortana is the main character.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it's got a huge universe.
Yeah, and just to be sure that people don't understand the universe wrong, this is very, very shortly narrowed down.
Yeah.
It is huge.
Yeah,
I mean, even just, you know, you talked about that, like, for, like, 20 minutes, and even now I'm like, yeah, it's huge, but I just...
And play the games again.
I just don't, you know, I don't quite see it yet, but, I mean, I was playing... I mean, I was watching... I haven't played, but I was watching... the cartoons, and that's a very poor introduction to the rest of the universe.
Yep.
Now, I was watching it, and certain elements I really liked, and some other elements I thought was
crap.
Those
cartoons get a lot better if you played the games.
I can imagine, and I think it was also made for the fans.
Yeah, but the universe is huge. There are a lot of books. I have 4 books. I think there's 10 or something like that.
Cool.
So books like in comics? With
no, actual books.
Or?
Real books.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like the...
Only text, no pictures.
Like Skyrim books.
Or Dead Space
and
books.
Okay. The first book I told about, Fall of Reach, is one of the best books I've ever read. Maybe because I like the sci-fi genre, but it's very, very well written.
Really?
Yeah, I could recommend that.
Is it hard reading, or...?
No, it's in English, but it's... No, I read it when I was 13, 14, maybe.
Okay.
So...
Well, so... With this whole concept that is so similar to the PlayStation user, which is me, for me, it's Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. For the purpose here right now, I'm not going to go into the massive details of it, because I obviously don't know, but I'm playing the third episode that was free on PSN Networks, and I'm pretty hooked.
That's a war on Earth.
Yeah, and it wasn't...
Every game up till the third, it's kind of a... escalation of that war.
Yeah, and I didn't know much about it, but I was hooked. It was much more truthful to what I would assume such a game would deliver. And also because you told me that it is a hugely successful franchise. So I thought that I'll take a look at it. So I ordered that trilogy box set for the games, started looking into it, and there was even a cartoon release not so long ago that I watched that I was pretty interested in.
I've seen that.
That's not bad. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, do it.
It's it had many things that was cool, but what I was really caught by was the detail of, for example, the Citadel, right? And you travel a lot in this game, which makes it so versatile and different and has many layers because, you know, if you play Dead Space, it's usually corridors and dark places, right?
It's Event Horizon.
Exactly. And it's a great concept and great game and great cartoon as well. I love that too, but Mass Effect,
it's two different genres. You can't compare them because it's an RPG and an arcade game.
Yeah, and but Mass Effect really delivers on those notes that makes it feel like somebody really thought about this. So
I thought about it a lot.
Exactly.
You've been in and read about all the aliens and about the places, and the technology.
Not at all.
So you can read about all the planets.
Like the other day, I was playing. I got to the point in third episode where the character, I can't even remember the name.
Shepard.
Yeah. He was walking around.
Stephen Shepard?
There we go. So we got the character walk around in the Citadel, right? And I'm walking around looking, I'm doing sightseeing here with the game, because I'm looking around looking at the details, looking at the window. I went into random rooms just to stand and look at the window like I was there. It's so awesome. And every now and then you interact with people, and it just like, it adds kind of like...
I love the room the elusive man is in. With the big glowing sun thingy.
Yeah, I don't know if I got that far. Did I?
I hope so.
Is that the guy? Never mind, but there's tons of really...
Oh, no, sorry, that's the sequel.
Right, so there's a ton of really famous actors. Mm-hmm. Everyone from Martin Sheen to, like, Trisha Helfner from Battlestar Galactica to quite a few from Battlestar Galactica. So voices and actors, it's great. Mm-hmm. You totally get caught into this world of, wow... If they think this is so good that they can have actors in it, and actors actually play it out very well, and the game is so well done.
This is also because it's such a big game, there's so much dialogue that you pick yourself.
Yeah.
And it has to capture you, you know?
Yeah.
If it would be boring, like some of the old Oblivion, when it's the same voices to all the characters you meet, and... It will go boring.
And one of the things
that game too.
You played the third one, right?
I played them all, yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about the level of detail where you're in his room on the spaceship that he's commanding, and you can change to casual clothes to interact with the, you know, the crew. And at one point, you can even press a button to listen to music.
I mean, get fish and feed them.
Yeah, and it's these kinds of things that, you know, it's really cool.
I dated a girl in the first or the second, you know, the blue alien Liara.
Right, yeah.
And in the second game, when I transferred my character, you can transfer your character so you have the same skills and you've made the choice you've made.
Crap, so I need to start from the beginning now, don't I?
Of course you do. There was a little picture of her on my desk.
No shit.
Because I dated her in the previous game.
Such nice details, right? I mean, it's like these small things, but it feels more personal. It feels like it's a part of
your... Then I saw my buddy, Lord Dovahkiin Yilf. Mm. He played it, and it was a completely different story. Most of the choices he made and places he went, I've never seen those before. So, just to grasp how big it is, and it's three games
that
are exactly the same size.
That is amazing. So, for me, a PlayStation player so far... I'm expecting to get an Xbox at one point. Xbox Live. It's my Halo. Although I do envy, because my friend Ulek has Halo, and you know, I always hear you guys talk so fondly of it. That
again,
would be...
You can't compare those two either.
No, but it's another one of those things I want to have.
Of course.
You know? So, I really hope that the new Xbox will be backward compatible, because I would like to play the old games.
Mm. And maybe if it won't be... Maybe you can get a collection like Mass Effect.
Yeah.
The first Mass Effect you couldn't get to PlayStation.
Really?
Yeah.
So what, this is a PlayStation 1 game or 2?
No, it's Xbox.
Yeah.
Wait, really? It's an Xbox game?
And then the third came, and then they re-released 1 and 3 to PlayStation. So when you put in the sequel, you have to make the choices you do in the first game, but you don't play it. So the big choices you do in the first game, you pick them out by questionnaires or something.
Oh, okay.
That's how they got it over to PlayStation.
Interesting. I didn't know that. It's funny. So yeah,
but
I mean,
BioWare that made Mass Effect is a hell of a developer. They also made The Old Republic.
Really?
And Knights of the Old Republic, which is one of
that's
the
why they're so fucking big.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huge.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about a sequel to, like, the third or fourth episode, sorry, to Mass Effect? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I think there's some DLCs, some downloadable content, so you can get some extra missions on Earth and shit, but it's the conclusion, you know. I don't want to spoil it, but it's kind of a conclusion of a trilogy.
All right. Well, I hope it's not the conclusion of a franchise, because I really love the whole thing. And the cartoon seemed to indicate that they want to push this further. Mm. Because the cartoon came out after the
trailer.
There's
been talk about a movie for a long time.
Really?
I've heard about that for a long time.
Would that be the same size as Halo? No, probably not.
It has to be a trilogy.
But then...
I don't think they can... Yeah, well, maybe because the first one is a single threat that you have to stop, not an entire race.
Mm.
So maybe they can cut out the first and just take the invasion story, you know?
Could be. Now, since we're talking about Invasion, I would like to bring up a new series that is brand new, hot off the internet and the television, wherever it's been shown online and
maybe
on TV.
Maybe put the trailer up so people can see that too. Defiance, right? Or what?
Yep, that's it. So, basically, Defiance is a brand new TV series from Sci-Fi Channel, and it was developed by three people. One who's Rachna S. O'Bannon, who was also the creator of Farscape with Jim Henson. His son, Brian Henson, sorry. And it was a great series, so I had like high hopes when I was watching this that this would be quality. So I sat down and watched it, and it's a pilot episode, so it's very hard to narrow down something that you would, you know, judge it by already. There were some things that caught my attention, and then the rest were kind of like, I'll deal with it when I've seen more episodes.
I saw it like a sci-fi Game of Thrones.
Yeah?
Yeah, because with the different clans and politic plays with each other, and you see the two
main characters. Can I borrow that piece of
paper? Huh?
So people can kind of get a grasp of what it is. Defiance is the American science fiction show that just started this Monday. And as we mentioned, who created it was Rachna S. O'Bannon with Kevin Murphy and Michael Taylor. Now, this show has a familiar face, Julie Benz, for anybody who doesn't know who she is. She's been in Dexter.
Is that the red hair?
Oh,
no. That's, the
mayor.
The other bitch.
Yeah. And the rest is, I mean, we have Graham Greene, the Native American, the chief or the leader of the... Yeah, we've seen him.
The main character, too.
And the main character, yeah. But
I think he's actually in Miss Impossible 2. Him?
Could be, actually. Basically, the story is that sometime this year, 2013, we get invaded. Although, it is not the type of invasion that you would normally...
By the Voltas.
Yes. And this is a race that has... it's not really a race. The Voltans, or the Voltans, as they're called, is not a single species. It's a collection...
Like the Covenant.
Yeah, it's a collection of seven different alien species who evolved on separate planets in the Voltaine star system that 5,000 years ago, millions of them had to flee because their star system had been destroyed. Now, at the time, they didn't consider Earth being habited by any intelligence, although I don't know, it's questionable because we did have the pyramids. Anyway, they set course for Earth and arrived in 2013, and automatically initiated the terraforming devices, which caused havoc and destruction and massive change to the Earth's surface.
And turned bears into fucking turtle aliens.
Exactly. It was like, it was spider, yeah, rat, rodent, weird, giant, yeah, thing. Yeah. And genetically altered monkey, which or gorilla, whatever it was, orangutan.
Fucking monkey.
Yeah, it was huge. And
Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman. Without a mask. And so basically, that happened. Then sometime between the show's actual time period, which is in the 2030s.
They attacked and there was a war for 33 years.
Yeah, the Pale Wars.
That's where we pick it up in the series.
And we pick it up with the guy, the main character, who has this red-haired alien daughter who's actually just adopted. It's not his flesh and blood.
He found her in the midst of the war.
Exactly.
And
now,
they're kind of, what are they, wreckage salvages?
They're,
or something?
They're like, yeah, they're like scavengers. Yeah. So they kind of, because every now and then this giant fleet of ships that's stuck up in the sky, or the atmosphere, or sorry, the orbit around Earth, every now and then crashes into Earth because it gets sucked down by gravity, right? Yeah. Now, within them, they have certain technology that even apparently their own race don't always know how to operate. Like, for instance, in the first episode, they find this magical blue orb, or whatever,
or something, yeah,
something that is immense power.
Yeah.
Now, the show
and
itself...
money's worth.
Yeah, yeah, so we have quite a few types of aliens. I'm not going to mention all of them. There's a ton of them. There's 7 types of alien species that cohabit Earth now.
Yeah.
And Earth is now this kind of Wild West kind of scenario where Earthlings
no,
and...
No leadership or nothing. It's free for the taking, like they say in the series.
So it's very cowboy-ish, like... For anybody who's seen Firefly, it's very much like Firefly in the sense that it has this Wild West feeling towards it.
Book of Eli, too.
Book of Eli. It has a little bit of Jeremiah going on. It has a lot of, you know, I'd say some part Farscape with all the mixed aliens. But it is going to sound as if it's a lot about families. Because we have the pale-skinned aliens that seem to be the governing... intelligence, that socially anyway, but then we have those reptilians who are technologically advanced. Those are the ones with the really fucked up
Nosferatu.
Yeah, the laser guns stuff that look really cool.
Oh, the laser knives.
No, that's the pale skin people.
Oh yeah,
but the one that shoots
the Shaylee-shin, yeah, the bald headed people.
Exactly, those are the technologically advanced race, yeah. But they are also seem to have an agenda. Now, the show itself starts out with, obviously, introducing the characters, and,
It actually starts with a Johnny Cash song. I really love that.
Yeah, so we have this, you know, obviously, the beginning of 2 characters. The main character is the father, the man, and the young woman, who's obviously his adopted daughter.
Yeah.
And they're both like this team because she's like very skilled with a knife, and he's apparently very skilled
they're
in other
areas. They're
planning
to make enough money to go to Antarctica,
which is the new heaven on Earth,
new
apparently.
New heaven, paradise.
Yeah,
because all the ice has melted and
there's
stuff underneath.
Exactly. So the show's premise seems okay.
I got hooked. I want to see it.
So well. I was like, I'm going to give it another 4 or 5 episodes. Then I know if this show is actually going to be any good. It had something. It had way too many questions for me because I wanted to know who everybody was. What were they doing? Why were they there? But as Mikkel pointed out, maybe that's part of the first season.
Yeah, and maybe you can get some more explanation when you play the game.
And that's the other thing
when
I wanted to
pick
to mention.
A race
now.
You want
to
play or something, you get some abilities.
This show launched with a game.
Yep.
Now, I don't know anything about the game. I've seen the pictures, but I don't know anything about it.
No, it's an online PvP game.
So it's an online... All right.
Yeah, so maybe the different races fight each other to inhabit Earth or whatever. But you pick a side and you kill people online.
Is that it?
I think so. Oh, you can customize your weapons, build them. And I've seen groups of people on ATVs, you know, down alleys and over hills and shit. It looks cool.
But there were like some badass aliens that I never really remember what it was called. But towards the end, there was this huge fight, remember? There was like those giant...
The Bioman.
They're the Bioman?
I thought the Bioman... No,
that's... Yeah, that's a Bioman. But what about the last bit... huge action scene. There's a...
They were the vultures or something. They were part of that
All right.
Yeah.
So anyway, Pilot was aired 15th of April, and the 22nd of April, 29th, and 6th of May, and so on, we'll have the continuation, the 13 episodes that have been scheduled to be shown, and I'm thinking after 13 episodes, July 8th, we'll go into a bit of a hiatus. That's usually the time where, you know, no one's home. So we'll see what happens. If, I mean, I'm pretty sure it'll be picked up because it's a big investment from Sci-Fi. It's one of the few science fiction shows out there right now that is new.
Some look really cool of the effects, but, you know, where the ship came in the beginning?
Yeah.
I think it looked weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. It seemed
cut in.
Yeah, something. Sometimes it looked really cheesy.
Yeah.
So, for anybody listening,
easy being cheesy.
Yeah. Well, I can say that apparently in Brazil, 16th of April, it was shown on Sci-Fi, and Canada Showcase on the 15th. Sci-Fi on every other. No, it's apparently there's Portugal gets to see this May 5th on just a channel called TV Series.
Hmm.
I don't know if we have anyone from Portugal, but I do know that I have a friend I want to thank deeply, who is not just a friend, he's like my brother. Ricardo, thanks a lot for my birthday gift. The awesome turtle is so cool that I'm going to actually have to order in the rest of the brothers because it is just way too cool. So thanks a lot, my man. This is Ricardo Freitas. You guys, you should check him out on...
Ricky Ricardo?
No, he's a Rick Dangerous, if there's anything. He's awesome. And you can find him on IMDb, actually. I'll show you the picture so you guys know who it is. And I'll be putting the link up as well. He's a mobster in The Muppets Again movie, which is still in production. And it will be out 2014. But this guy is simply amazing. So thanks a lot. He is really cool, man. Thanks a lot, man. And he's been like a brother to me.
I have a note here.
Have I said that before? I have said that before.
I have a note here about the aliens you didn't, the Volta.
Yeah.
They were born to destroy worlds. That's what they say when they try to invade.
All those giant turtle things.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good show.
No, it is.
It does seem.
Again, it's the first episode, yeah. And you don't know how many seasons it will be, so yeah. Of course you can't get answers to everything. Yeah.
Well, that's true. But
and another thing, the main character, a hero dude,
yeah.
He flirts with the mayor, who has a sister who he fucks, and she's a whore.
Is that the sister? I thought there was like some lesbian thing
that
going on.
I thought was really
was that
weird.
The sister?
Yeah.
How do you know it was a sister?
Because she said so.
Really?
Yeah. Is that your sister? He said, yeah. Why? Because I fucked her.
Really?
For money.
All right, I see that. I didn't know. All right, she pays him, right?
Yeah, then I wrote down, flirts with one whose sister he's fucked, who is a whore. Nice future.
Yeah, all right, that makes sense now.
But all in all, I want to see more and play the game.
All right, so, well, how will you play the game?
Buy it.
Oh, is it going to be out for consoles? I thought it was just an online
both
thing.
Both consoles and PC.
Maybe it's free for download. Maybe you should check out.
I don't think it's free.
You sure?
Yeah.
It could be something like Justice.
Is that free?
The downloadable one? The one where you can create your own characters?
No, DC Universe?
Yeah, DC Universe, that's free.
Oh yeah, but it's been out for so long. This shit just got out.
Well, it's a good promotion. Check it out anyway.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
So, on a, let's just say from 1 to 10, Defiance for me is 5.
And yeah, I can't put a... it's the first episode. I can't judge
you know,
it yet.
We'll see. If it picks up, it'll only go up.
I want to see more. Because yeah. I'm standing with a couple of questions like you, and I hope to get some answers.
So, since this is the season of Sci-Fi, this year is Sci-Fi, I know that there's some other science fiction shows on the way. And just so you guys know, that there was actually one TV show that got made like pilot but never aired. That sounded really strange by the creator of... I think it was a creator by those who made Battlestar. But basically the premise was, this was the future, and somehow, an alternate reality, there's a cop, and his job was obvious, you know, he's a detective cop, but the crimes that happen are all based in a magical world. So it's kind of like as if magic is natural, and so he's just walking around solving, you know, cases So it gets to that whole level that is like, well, so they use this magic or what kind of magic? But they actually filmed the whole pilot, but it was never aired. I just never understand that. Because if you air one, I mean, if you order one show and it's finished, why don't you just let it out and see what people think? At least for iTunes, so people can download it, right? They've done that quite a few times, especially sci-fi. Mm. So it's really strange, but there's been quite a few...
Some shows make the pilot and show that before making the rest. Do you think that's what happened here?
Yeah, but they never showed it. Never aired. Never aired.
Not even the pilot?
Nope. Not even the pilot.
Sci-fi. The bitches from this film is not yet rated watch pilots too?
No, I think it was actually internal. It was just for sci-fi. They saw it, and it just never got out.
No, that's just like Game of Thrones. They made one pilot, and it got reviewed by the company who made it, and then they remade that episode and made 9 others.
Right, that's the one I sent you, right? That link.
You exactly. Sent something to
yeah, that's the one.
Where
yeah.
some of the characters were played by other actors.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what happened here.
I deleted it because I thought you was hating on Game of Thrones and I didn't want to hear it.
Assumptions, Jesus.
Maybe that's what happened here. They made the pilot.
No, the story was never made into anything else. It was just strange because it was a full-on, complete thing with soundtrack, you know, everything. The whole episode was finished. But someone said it's not the time and we don't want it, so it got canceled. Even before it got a chance to get out onto the internet. Which is really bad because, you know, why not just offer it on iTunes for a free download and see what people think? That's it, simple as that.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything, but if you see the people's reaction is great, then you can pick it up. But that's just not how it works at Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi is the dumbest channel of all. They have wrestling, and they have cooking programs, they have reality show programs. I'm thinking, why do you call yourself sci-fi? Well,
cooking
like MTV,
programs.
Man. Like MTV.
Sci-fi no cooking.
Yeah, now there's Cyber green cake. Goo and blue goo. Yeah. So
some blue milk here.
So I think, I mean, we've been around quite a lot. I mean, the last thing that we really didn't touch much upon is Stargate. Which is, I guess, the only reason worth mentioning is since we're talking about science fiction. It was shown on Sci-Fi, but Stargate was an original series from MGM. Now, Stargate is based on the film that was also based on the book by Eric von Daniken, which was The Chariots of the Gods, which is the story where Kurt Russell is... Major...
Yeah, Kurt Russell is the military guy.
Yeah.
And there's a scientist guy, which is the...
Daniel
lead.
Jackson, who's like James Spader, plays the character. So basically, there's a ring, and it's a Stargate. They travel from Earth to another planet, and that got made into...
Egyptian planet.
Well, yeah, the connection was that, you know, aliens were here and all that.
Mm. Aliens were Egypt.
Yes.
Egyptians.
So,
how do you say it?
Egyptians. Oh. So, Stargate... turned into a very successful, I think it was like 10 or 11 season Stargate TV series with Richard Dean Anderson, you know, the guy who is MacGyver. And so that went on very long time, and they even made 2 spin-off series, which was Stargate Atlantis and the other one, which I can't remember, I think it was called Stargate Infinity or something.
And the SG-1 or something?
Well, Stargate SG-1 is the TV series.
Oh, okay.
That was alright for
I've only seen the movie.
It was okay for a certain amount of seasons, but it got really boring, you know? It's got very Star Trek-like concept that, you know, you land on a planet you've never been and everybody speaks English. Everyone looks like humans.
So, oh, again, that concept. I hate it, man.
Yeah, which is why...
We're so big on ourselves that we think aliens
exactly.
look like us.
So if you really like the concept of real aliens, watch Farscape.
Yeah, Defiance.
Or Defiance, but yeah, because the same creator. But definitely Farscape, you will see aliens in a show that really look like aliens.
You haven't given me that yet.
I haven't, but
you
I have
promise
to.
Me, man. You
I will!
Me, man.
But shit, I got you like that.
But I'm all...
You got so many things on your... you got so many things on that, you know, drive, and you haven't seen it yet. So you tell me when you want to watch it.
Okay.
Speaking of
no!
which... Dylan, you son of a bitch. How far have you gotten with Battlestar Galactica Pilot?
I prefer not to answer that right now.
What is this? You need your
lawyer. It's still
lawyer.
Laying in my drawer. Man, it's 3 hours long. Dude, I need the time.
You look online for anything that has to do with Dylan and quotes from Arnold Schwarzenegger for more than 3 hours, and you can't watch this.
You know, yeah. I get home at 3 a.m. 3 p.m.
3 a.m. Where are you walking home?
Every day. I need to chill. I need to cook some food.
I know, it's hard to be here. It's like...
It's demanding. It's on demanding. On your
soul. Saruman. All right, I get it.
Yeah.
Stop whining.
Exactly.
But I will watch it within the next couple of years.
Oh boy.
I'll bring it back to me because I'm into the sci-fi shit now after I've seen Defiance. I need something.
All right, so I'll bring you the first couple episodes of Farscape.
Farscape, is that Serenity?
No.
Okay. No, that's Firefly.
That is Firefly.
Farscape.
Firefly.
Farscape is an amazing series, and so is Battlestar. So yes, I think we're closing in on the end of this episode. So I think I'm pretty much done. I don't know what else to say.
I'm dying.
You're dying.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
It's been a pleasure dying in here.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure dying with you too.
I'm melting.
You're melting away. That's it for me. Game over.
Game over, dude.
But I'm all woman.
We now return control of your television set to you. Until next week at this same time, when the control voice will take you to the outer limits.
Fingers you have used to dial are too fat. To obtain a special dialing wand, please mash the keypad with your palm now.